Hey, welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm joined by Kyle Connor, Ben Spreen, and Mike Breeling. I, of course, am Jordan Schieffer. Today, we're going to be talking about some of the things we've been driving, the Land Rover Discovery being one of them, as well as an unexpected multiple day, well, it was one day full of Ioniq 5 driving, testing, and pitching against things like the Mustang Mach-E and ID4. Some interesting stuff there, and a little bit of news. And maybe figure out what car I should buy next. Anyways, let's jump right in. Kyle, we still at this time of this recording have the Land Rover Discovery, the one sharing the chassis with the Defender, but what, it's a bit more soccer mommy? I don't know how to describe it. It looks good.
Well, it looks interesting. So you have, yeah, we'll get through this one quick because everyone probably wants to hear about the Ioniq 5 testing that we did. But the Discovery and the Defender are on the same chassis, but the Defender's 15 inches
longer
and 3 inches
taller,
but narrower because of trails. And yeah, the Discovery is more like your everyday mobility mom car. It's awesome. Drives great. It's got the best freaking inline 6-cylinder engine I've ever driven. Better and smoother than the Defender. Same engine, different tune. This is 360.
60 P360, right?
Yes. But it's 355
horsepower. Yes. Horsepower.
And which is so annoying.
They've got it figured.
Yeah, it's so smooth, but it loves to just boost and sit at low RPM. So you need to like get into the throttle for it to rev out. And oh, it's such a sweet, smooth sounding engine. Sounds all the way great past the red line. This thing goes 500 RPM past indicated red line to 6750 before upshift. It's just wonderful. And it looks pretty good. The back end is still a bit awkward with the license plate being off center, but there are kits to fix that. And so, like,
I think as long as you get the dynamic, which it looks like you have there, you get that black dynamic surround where the plate is. It makes it a little less strange. Although I kind of like it because the LR4 was off-centered. So
yeah, but the LR4 looked better because it was a boxier.
And it had that glass that came down to go with it.
Like when the LR3 launched, that thing was like the future on wheels. And the LR4 like really just dialed it in. And I think a V8 LR4 is the sweet spot.
Now, does this have the pseudo split tailgate like the previous Discovery 5 had, where it was a normal tailgate that opens but had a little like shelf open?
No shelf.
Oh, interesting.
I hate it.
Upsetting. I'm actually kind of upset by that. I really like the split.
Shelf or still folding actual tailgate.
It's so un-Land Rover to have one big thing that opens up.
So I think the way Land Rover pitches their product line, if I recall, it's been a while, but I think Defender is the ultimate in capability. Discovery is the ultimate in everyday practicality or something like that. And then the ultimate luxury is Range Rover, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, at the end of the day, you should never buy this new. And here's why. It costs the same as a Defender. Actually, this one costs $2,000-$3,000 more than the Defender we're testing next week. And look in a year or 2 years from now. Actually, sorry, 3 years from now, off lease value. This thing's going to be worth $40,000, and that Defender's going to be worth exactly what it says on the sticker right now.
True.
Yeah, the Defender will definitely hold its value better. I do really like the Discovery. All of them, like Discovery 1 through 5, this is the 5th gen. I like the way it looks, and I don't mind the offset license plate. It's grown on me.
They drive so nice. The seating position
is
wonderful. Oh, I know.
It now has the Defender steering wheel, which is a little bit awkward at first because it's this really chunky utilitarian tractor steering wheel in your nice luxury SUV. But then you start using it and you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. And the wheel is huge, but it's really good. It has, yeah, I guess two weird issues. The first is getting in the third row is the biggest pain in the ass with these electric second row seats that you got to just wait for.
Oh, they're not. Okay.
Very comfortable third row, right?
Jordan sat back there. He fit, and I fit back there.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
And they're heated seats in the third row.
Not in this one.
Yeah, some of them.
Well, we had a spec I would not personally recommend.
My favorite is you get the one with massage seats in the front, heated cooled seats second row, and then heated seats third row. And whenever you spec that, you can get it with a USB port for every seat in the car, which is brilliant.
Yeah, we did have 10 USB ports, a nice mixture of USB A and USB C. It was just, yeah, good interior, good material feel for the most part. I love driving it. It's definitely
lazy. The throttle's lazy.
The throttle, it was so weird.
It's got the longest throttle pedal travel where normally where I rest my foot and go to full throttle, you know, like I'm hitting that wall in any car, no problem. This, my foot hits the floor and then I have to like move my leg to get it to go past the kickdown switch. So I'm like full leg extension getting this thing to get up and go. And it, the first like 3 inches of the pedal do absolutely nothing.
But it makes for a smooth drive.
No, it doesn't.
It's not supposed to have any sportiness.
No, I know. But what I want is 30 to 40% throttle, 3,500 RPM, nice boost on there, getting that nice mid-range grunt of the six-cylinder. And what I don't get, what normally happens is this thing isn't moving. I actually have to go and just nail it. And then I'm just like sideways in this thing and everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy. Makes plenty of great power, very smooth, very practical. There's nothing you can fit behind the third row. It can tow a lot, by the way.
8,200 pounds.
Insane. Yeah.
So big fan. Love it. It's going to suck giving this thing up. Very few cars I actually even drive that are here. Like I'll just drive my own cars, even though we're reviewing them. This one, I used every last time I needed to go anywhere and really enjoyed it. Two things I wish it had. One, I wish this one was spec'd with more off-road capability. It didn't have a locking rear diff or any of that stuff. But we did do like some dirt roads, as you can see, and it was fine. And then second would be, what was the second thing that I wanted? It was the most important one. I can't remember.
Oh, no.
It's going to drive
me.
I kind
of just want a Discovery. Like, I like them. I like them. Like, look for them occasionally.
It's the but most
mib orange, though. It has
capable orange thing, like practical. You can fill people's stuff. You can take it over any mountain. You can take a Defender over realistically. It's kind of like a do-everything vehicle.
The only issue,
like our Lexus.
The only issue is the there's a certain number of people who look up and say, oh, is that the new Ford Explorer? Then you have to. But, you know, I feel like if you're buying a Land Rover, the Defender is just so cool. And to defend
getting one.
No.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Like, I get why you buy a Discovery or a Defender. I mean, I love both, but I think the Discovery just appeals to a certain segment of person who does not care about how off-road capable a Land Rover can be.
Totally. No one buying the Land Rover badge is ever going to feel like color. No one's cross shopping this and the Defender. You're either a Defender person not, or you're a mom who wants to drive a Land Rover and get her kids to school, or Mike. So
I would drive one. I don't care. I'd have one.
Anyway, nice. What else we doing this week, Jordan?
Ioniq 5. There's a lot
We also drove a Mustang Mach-E and an ID4 all-wheel drive and Ioniq 5 all in one day.
Yeah. That was
a lot of cars. That's some good back-to-back comparison.
Here's the Mach-E. Fascinating comparison, especially this one. This is one that not a lot of people, I think about because these cars are seen so differently. ID4 and Ioniq 5, so many people are putting them against each other on paper. So it was cool that we could actually experience them, not just compare
their
specs.
Yeah, when this podcast goes up, the Ioniq 5 versus ID4 video should have been up by then.
Yeah. But, Kyle, you love the Ioniq 5. I mean, you went to the first launch in San Diego and loved it. But now it sounds like based on our conversation yesterday, it's like you met your hero too well on the first day.
I don't know what it is, but I was, you know, into the Ioniq 5 really well, but I knew it was not for me because it's not for me. And then driving it again yesterday, I was just like, yeah, this is not for me. but like it is for everyone else. It's a bit like the ID4. I love the ID4. I wouldn't buy one.
Yeah.
You know?
It's easy to recommend to people. And it's hard for me to think ID4 is better. There's a couple things that are nice about it. The keyless or the that you just get in and go is very nice. It is annoying.
Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Mustang Mach-E versus Ioniq 5 first.
Okay. Yeah. These are more similar than I expected, although...
You know, the size difference is something you don't notice until you see... I've seen it next to other cars, but seeing it next to Mach-E puts the... You know, it's very chunky. You know, it kind of... I mean, it almost looks like an e-tron in size a little bit.
Smaller than an e-tron, I think. It doesn't... It looks smaller and feels smaller than a Mach-E. But what I will say... And it is lower to the ground overall, I think. Mm-hmm. But not by much, actually. And... between these two, it's fairly simple to say, okay, yes, I'd like the Ioniq 5 for me. There are some drivability concerns with Mach-E, namely the brake blending on each one that I've driven is quite odd. If you are in one pedal driving and you roll onto the brake pedal before the car has ramped up to full regen, it does this thing where it like skips the regen ramp and goes like, here's all your regen plus friction braking. And it just is like, whoa, like it's like playing catch up. And that's odd tuning. What Tesla does, which I think is arguably better in this particular scenario, because their brake pedal doesn't have to do blending, is you blend in friction brakes, and then I can pull back off friction brakes as the regen ramps up. So I can do a little tap in the Tesla, fill in the gap before it's ramped all the way. And it's just really nice brake control. That drives me nuts in Mach-E. One pedal driving drives me nuts in Mach-E. And so does the suspension tuning. That is not the case on the GT Performance with the MagnaRide. Really settles down. But we weren't comparing the non-N Hyundai against the GT Performance. We're, you know, these are both extended range, all-wheel drive variants. And have to say that the Ioniq 5 from a styling looks... of course, and driving and overall just feel and technology wise charging, that was the clear pick for me.
Yeah, same here. There are things I like about the Mach-E, and I do actually like its styling, but then seeing it next to the ID4, I was already kind of tired of seeing the Mach-E. Like, it's I don't know, I just
You need a GT Performance for the Mach-E to look
solid. Mm-hmm. The GT Performance just fixes so many things. But the Ioniq 5, I would
accept the performance.
Well, it's a separate conversation. It's not really.
Yeah, see our previous week for that. but it is interesting. We've talked about the styling of the Ioniq 5. The trick it plays on your eyes with that wheelbase that's longer than a Telluride. It's a longer wheelbase than the e-tron SUV, even though the car itself is like a bit smaller. It just makes you think it's smaller when you see it in photographs. But then in person, it's like, wow, this is spacious. Back seat's great. Front seat's great. I was impressed even with this mid-spec. Of course, I would want the limited because the glass roof.
A lot of money to get the limited, though. It's 55 grand.
Yeah, it's a big jump. I was just looking at the pricing. Yeah. It's a pretty big jump.
I feel like they need to have a trim that lets you kind of do battery and rear drive with like the kind of goodies that you might want just in a tech
glass
car.
Roof. The standard sound system was fine in the Ioniq 5. This one didn't have the Bose, and I thought it was more than adequate, honestly. The Bose is like not even that amazing. So like you're not paying it's not going to blow your mind. And this was like about the same. And yeah, I would get the limited only for the glass roof. Heads-up display, don't care. Mm-hmm. The camera thing, don't care. This lane centering, because I did a range test in it, we'll talk about it after, the most competent lane centering and lane changes I think I've experienced in a long time. Zero phantom braking on an over 200-mile stretch, and like zero fuss, barely asked me to touch the wheel. Just like watch out, Tesla Autopilot. This HDA2 freaking rocks.
Yeah.
I like the color of the one in this picture, actually, the Ioniq 5. I've not driven either of these cars, so I can't really comment how they drive. I've seen a lot of Mach-Es.
You haven't driven a Mach-E, Mike?
No.
Oh, we got to change that.
No, yeah. Not driven either of them. But the Ioniq 5 is so new now. But I will say I like the color of that one.
Yeah, what was it called? Cyber Gray or something?
Cyber Gray.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I'd go over that way.
Or and it had the 19-inch wheels, which I had only seen at the launch from an engineering car. So it didn't.
I actually like those wheels. Yeah, compared to the wheels, aren't bad. I think they look cleaner.
All right, so we've determined Mach-E, Ioniq 5. You go Ioniq 5. There are reasons to buy the Mach-E, which is if you like a higher riding position, if you like a slidier car that's not really that slidey.
Yeah.
Like if you want, I don't know, and more range in the Mach-E, I think without question.
Yeah. Some pros for that, but the real more apples to apples comparison felt like the ID4.
I don't think it's any more or less. They're all in the same category. What makes you think ID4 competes more with Ioniq 5 than Mach-E?
I feel like they have a closer range in price. Mach-E is just always more expensive than Ioniq 5.
Yeah, but Mach-E is a 100 kilowatt hour pack. You can get a smaller battery in it.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I've built plenty of Mach-Es on the configurator that are like 44 grand. Like I think all three of those cars are direct competitors
with each other. They're all right in there.
This one just feels it felt closer to the Ioniq 5 than the Mach-E did for me.
Huh.
But I think the
Mustang's trying to have this sportier.
Yeah, image. The Mustang's trying to do something it's not good at.
Mm-hmm. And these two have this more, I mean, especially the brands they're coming from, you know, it's more of an everyday feeling thing. It's not like you're trying to be different, which you kind of feel like you are with the Mach-E, even though it has a lovely interior. But these have more conventional interiors. I feel like the Ioniq 5 and ID4 feel more conventional overall.
Getting into the ID4 after the Ioniq 5, I was like, wow, it needs a glass roof. Even with the cover on it, the carrier.
The Ioniq 5 needs a glass roof?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it. I didn't realize how much I cared about that, but I just like the feeling of glass roof. But this was interesting. I mean, ID4 all-wheel drive, of course, lifts it a little bit, so it definitely felt taller. But otherwise, pretty comparable. There are some nuances, like we hinted at earlier,
Nuances. There's literally, you're going to spend half the time at charging stations in the Ioniq 5 than the ID4.
No, yeah, there's some major things.
Yeah.
The little things are like the key, the USB ports, like why the Ioniq 5 not have USB-C? I don't know. But the charging speed, I mean, it's almost double at its peak, at least.
Well, the Ioniq 5, I would say, handles better, is faster in a straight line, charges way faster, looks better, but I still would prefer to drive the ID4 around.
Why?
Unless you're going on a road trip.
Unless I'm going on a road trip.
Yeah. That's what I keep coming back to.
Kind of chunky about the ID4 all-wheel drive, especially with that roof box. And then you sit inside and the seat actually goes down. And I feel like I'm not sitting on top of the car. I'm sitting inside the car. And the Ioniq 5 has this very Model 3-like riding position where I'm looking down on everything. In the ID4, I can get nice and low. It's got a wonderful steering wheel. Absolutely wonderful steering wheel. It has amazing on-limit handling characteristics in the ID4 that no one will ever care about. But you were even behind me, when I was ripping the ID4 around, I was power on, coming out of a corner, I'm going straight on the wheel and the car's rotating under power. And I'm just driving around in everyday traffic, you know, but like it just feels so good at everything that it does. But then there's some things about ID4 that really bug me. It has the worst brake pedal of almost any car. Really?
It's how does a company who has made the Porsche Taycan and the Audi e-tron GT have a brake pedal that's that bad?
Yeah, it's just so squishy, nothing happens. The only way to get good braking response is when you stand on the brake pedal, because then you get a physical connected brake pedal and you get a nice firm ABS response. So ID4 has amazing hard braking, but driving around, man, does it suck. And it squeaks every time you stop. Every time you come to a stop, it goes on the brakes. They have this like weird coating or something. It's just in every ID4, you get this odd resonance coming from the brake rotors. And, you know, it's got this quite odd shifter. You can't turn creep off. There's no auto hold. It doesn't have one pedal driving. Like, there are fundamental issues with the ID4. I think ultimately, I don't know why, it just comes down to it improves my day when I drive an ID4. But it also, the Ioniq 5 kind of does the same. This was a hard video for me to shoot because I truly love the ID4, but you cannot ignore the advantages of Ioniq 5 coming from a much better sound system, which I think is a huge flaw in the ID4. Really quiet and competent driving dynamics. These cars drive almost identically in the way I would describe them. They both handle the same way at the limit. They're both really quite good. But the Hyundai almost feels a bit better engineered, especially from a braking perspective and a tire selection. And, you know, Hyundai engineers are crazy when it comes to making their cars handle these days.
How's the ride difference? I haven't been in the Ioniq.
Both good, both smooth, both feel like they have really long wheelbases, both kind of float a little bit, and it's nice.
So what I'm hearing then is the ID.4 has whatever that magic is that a standard Golf has that makes a standard Golf, while on paper maybe not better than other vehicles in the category, so much more pleasant to be in.
German.
Yeah, there's German. Something German.
Yes, maybe it's just German. Yeah.
Like you just drive people. It and you're like, a lot of people spend a lot of time on this, and it just it feels nice, and I'm happy driving it. And honestly, I get the same from the Ioniq 5. I don't know mentally what it is, but my heart is with the ID.4. I hate to say it, but it really is. I'd still buy the Ioniq 5 over either of them just because of the charging. I mean, you know, it's, it's a whole
you can't
world.
Ignore it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you're going to be able to play around with battery pack thermals. The car's faster. You can go full traction control off. Like, it does a lot more of the stuff I want it to do. So yeah, Ioniq 5 wins this comparison, but that was really tough because driving away from this comparison, I mean, we could have all switched cars, done whatever we wanted. I drove the ID.4 back.
Yeah.
Well, I know you really liked the ID.4 since it's come out, and I wonder if some of that is just because it was it made the first impression really well back, you know, a year ago, and you're just so familiar with it.
It could be. I mean,
it set a high bar. It really, the ID.4 did set a high bar to what an affordable mass market EV can be. That's not a Tesla.
And should be. It's just awesome. But so many people don't get that car. That's what I don't understand. There's so many journalists that did not understand ID.4. And maybe I don't understand it. I just love it. But like, even Volkswagen's like, why do you like this car so much? They're like, we don't know anyone that likes this car as much as you. And I'm like, well, it just like, it makes sense. It's like really well thought out.
Do you think part of the position of that car is flawed in the fact that they don't have ID.3 in the US, which I feel like makes more sense in our marketplace, even though SUVs are so popular, because you can say, well, here's this category it's very specifically a part of.
We really should have ID.3, and every day that goes by I feel more strongly about that. I would actually drive an ID.3 every day if it was out.
I would. I like that, like GTX all-wheel drive one or whatever it was. That was a good looking little car.
Yeah. What we really need is that Cupra Born.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The really fast one. But yeah, I would drive an ID.3 every day. We had one, you know, in Europe. I always mentioned we had this car. Just great. So good.
Great.
Like Kaiman would drive. We would pit whatever. He'd get in the Taycan Turbo Cross Turismo, and I'd be in the ID.3 just as happy.
Yeah.
And the Euro cars get auto hold, unlike US cars.
Yeah, it's an omission too. I don't understand.
Is no auto hold on ID.4?
No, not in the US.
Huh. And it's not.
I guess I never tried it.
The plans to be released is like a software update or anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things about the ID.4 that are deal breakers for me. And I have qualms with the Ioniq 5, but there's far fewer. I'd be happier day to day life with the Ioniq 5.
I think most people would. I think Ioniq 5, for the people viewing this or listening to this podcast and all of us, it's just the cooler car.
Yeah, it's awesome. The design is stellar. They did things with headlights and taillights that no one's really done versus everyone else's doing their own tweaks. And then Hyundai just did something crazy. And I really like it. But I will say, like, you know, Kyle, when we had the ID.4 for our comparison, we also had the Mini Cooper JCW at the same time. Like, I loved following you. I was in the ID.4, you were in the Mini Cooper up not Angel's Crest, the local Angel's Crest, Risk Canyon, and I was loving the ID.4 at its limit. I thought it was just so predictable, and I finished a heated canyon drive with a smile on my face that no journalist would ever expect, because pretty much no one really hates the ID.4, but no one's ever like, this is great. They're just like, it is there.
But that's what's so great about it. It's so boring that it doesn't annoy you.
But then we took it on the dunes northeast of LA, and I was like, that was really when I was sold on it. So I
that
still
was amazing.
Love
we
it.
Basically that Rebel Rally ID.4, we jumped on every whoop. The back of it, the back of the car was bam, boom, boom, boom. And it held together.
Yeah, that was great.
But well built. Someone broke the other one.
That looked good, though. That looked fun.
Tanner Faust broke, and maybe it's because it was Tanner Faust. I don't know. He probably drove
it hard. He's a very gentle driver. It must have been some other reason.
Yeah, it could have been the person driving it at the time. but yeah, so Kyle, how was the, you know, I had to leave midday to go see my football team lose. Anyways, how was the rest of
the Ionic? That's a terrible way to spend your day.
how was the, you know, the range and charging experience testing the Ionic 5? Because we've had Forrest on before, and that was his biggest critique of the Ionic 5 was the range.
Hey, but you know those CPE 250s that are labeled 125 kilowatts that no one's been able to ever get more than 90 out of?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
112 on the Ionic 5.
Wow.
Okay.
So I don't know how that makes any sense, because I've plugged Tikon into them many times. 800-volt car, another 800-volt car. Tikon accepted 91, 92 kilowatts. Ionic 5, 112 going right out to it. That's, so maybe software, maybe improvements. But it took three tries. The first one, 45 kilowatts. The second one, 45 kilowatts. The third one, 45 kilowatts. And now I'm thinking, like, is the car telling the charger how many amps it wants at 800 volts, but it's only telling it it's a 400-volt car and giving it half? Like, this makes no sense to me. But then the fourth charger worked.
Does the Ionic 5 have any onboard converter in the same way Tikon does to enable 400 volt charging?
Yes, and it's genius. Do you want to know how it does it?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think I've heard, but
go ahead. Tikon uses a DC to DC booster at 400 roughly volt to pack voltage around 800 fully charged. And basically what it does is it tells the charger, hey, I'm a 400 volt car. Here's how many amps I want. And then it boosts up the power and sends it in. Yep. And it's a separate unit that needs to be cooled. That's part of the whole loop. And that was the first 800 volt mass production car. That's how they had to do it. Hyundai, genius. What they do is they plug in, you plug in your car. It says, oh, hey, I'm an 800 volt car. Oh, you can't give me that. I'm a 400 volt car. It routes all the power to the rear drive unit inverter. The drive unit inverter then accepts all the power, steps up the voltage, and then regens the battery pack at pack voltage at up to 100 kilowatts.
That's very clever. I like that.
Yeah. It's like that's you already have the – yeah. So they use the rear one because it works the same on rear or all-wheel drive, and 100 kilowatts continuous. It's awesome.
Decent. Yeah. That's a clever use of a highly integrated system of technologies. You know, it's, you can tell there's not – everything's – been involved from start to finish. Yep, there
it's super super good. Similar Lucid uses a separate box called the Wonder Box, but it does other functions like vehicle to vehicle and vehicle to load charging and some other stuff, as well as this boosting technology. So everyone's got their own take. Hyundai's is the most elegant.
Oh, you know what, here's the other reason: V2V and V2G for Ionic. Yeah,
personally, like 1.2 kilo, it's just a wall outlet.
that's still cool. I want it.
So you need, in order to get the functionality in the charging port every car has, you don't get the adapter unless you get the limited. I
can
think
you just buy it though.
You get to buy it from the accessory shop. I don't think it's available yet.
You can go to the parts counter and buy one then.
Yeah, you'll eventually be able to get one. That's how that'll work. We charged a Tikon off the EV6 in Europe, and that worked really well. But then range. So we did 100% charge, drove it all the way down to zero. I assume, when does this podcast go up, Jordan? Thursday?
You're muted, Jordan. Come on.
Thursday.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, I imagine by Thursday we'll have, or on Thursday, the range test going up. I think it'll probably go up Wednesday. It did at 70 miles an hour in colder temperatures. Now, keep in mind, Forrest came on our show and was saying he was getting 180 miles per charge, something like this. But this is why it's so important to do a loop style test, counteracting wind and elevation. Single direction never tells the story. And going from true 100% down to zero, where, you know, the car is like, you better pull over because I'm shutting down. And that's basically what it was telling us. It's just like, I'm freaking out. It did 227.4 miles, I think. 227.
Wow. That's actually pretty good.
Or was it 224.7?
Deus Ex Show 3 miles. 220 is
good.
Right. But yeah, I like you think that. That's good?
I mean, what size battery pack did yours have again?
It has a 77 kilowatt hour battery pack.
I mean, considering it's an SUV, that's like about the same range I get out of the Taycan with a similar size battery pack.
So I totally agree that it seems about right. It's 3.1 miles per kilowatt hour average.
I think that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, fine. Doesn't it's not magically efficient though. Remember Hyundai Kona and the regular Ioniq?
That was very
yes,
good.
Yes, the Kona was
the Ioniq especially.
Yeah,
that Ioniq little like
500
yeah, kilowatt Ioniq. Hour. Yeah, it was really
but
good.
These were really small battery, lightweight cars. Although the Kona and the Niro had 64 kilowatt hour pack and were still an SUV kind of shape. Anyway, I think it's acceptable, but by far I think it's right on point with ID4 all-wheel drive would be my guess. I don't think there's much difference between them, but for sure Mach-E would go farther. For sure Model Y would go farther.
Yeah, I agree.
So there's
I think it's 20 miles short of being perfect.
Yeah, I would have loved to see like 250 at 70 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was an all-wheel drive one, right? Yeah.
This is all-wheel drive, but not on the big wheels. See, the nice thing about Zach, my friend Zach bought this car in town here, is it's not a press car, which means it's not maxed out, and it actually has the 19-inch wheels, not the 20s that all the new cars
have. Yeah, I actually like those wheels, so that's a pretty good comparison then with the all-wheel drive with the smaller wheels. I was just curious. We haven't. You don't know anyone who has a rear-wheel drive Ioniq 5.
I don't. I do know someone who has one, but they don't live nearby. But I will range test a rear-wheel drive because this is the big discrepancy for this car. The all-wheel drive's 258 miles EPA or 256. I think it's 258. And then the rear-wheel drive's 303.
It was a big – it was a significant enough difference. I was like, wow, that – like that, people are going to think, like, do I really need all-wheel drive?
But this is why I can't figure it out, because when you're driving the all-wheel drive, even in normal mode, key up setting, which is how EPA tests the cars, it disconnects the front motor.
We still got lots of rotational, you know, friction and whatnot.
50 miles worth. Okay, Volkswagen ID.4, great example, right? It doesn't even disconnect the front. It's just an asynchronous front motor, so it shuts off. It's an induction motor. It loses 10 miles in the EPA cycle. If this lost 20, I'd be like, okay, makes sense. Frictional losses. 50 miles.
Yeah.
How heavy is that motor?
Yeah, I don't know actually, but it doesn't, something doesn't add up. And when like Forrest asked Hyundai about this, right, Jordan, then they said it has like performance tuned inverters. And like, that was the only thing I could think that may make an impact. Mm. But you're like, an inverter is not just burning off 50 miles because it's inefficient. Like, that's like a mile or two difference on a full charge. Like, we're talking percents here, small percents. So I cannot for the life of me believe the rear wheel drive will go anywhere near 300 miles on a charge.
That's what I was just going to say. Maybe it won't even get near that.
Yeah. And if it'll does, then something's up. And if it does, then there's a major software issue or something's going on with the all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
That's just burning off the juice.
Yeah. How much, when you're cruising, it's just going rear drive. But when you're kind of doing your accelerations, does it really always tend to try and split power or something?
You need to go so far down. It maxes the rear out before.
Oh, so it does the Model 3 strategy then.
Yeah. But you'll feel a little dip. Like if you're cruising and then nail it, it'll go nothing. It's a pleasant dip. It's not bad. It just feels like it's picking down a gear almost.
So
I can't figure this out. But anyway, I actually was pretty, meh. I was like, okay, that's. I was either expecting it to be way worse or way better. I wasn't expecting it to be
in the middle.
I was like, this thing's going to do 150 miles because everyone says it's so inefficient. I'll be ready for dinner. And then like it just kept going. And we're like in the middle of Nebraska. And we're like, oh, we better turn around so we can make it back. But it was fun. Zach and I did the test together. That's two people not running driver, only climate control. So we probably could have eked out another, 5 miles just by running singular if I just did it myself. I'll do a warm weather range test, whether it's on this car or another one at some point. And I believe Tom Malagni is going to do a 20-inch car, a limited one, this week. And that will be up in just a few days after this podcast to compare to.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah. Those,
I kind of
those...
forgot it was cold, and now I'm okay with that range.
Yeah, so the all-wheel drive gets a heat pump. The rear-wheel drive resistive heating only, and we had winter mode off for the range test. So it wasn't trying to warm up the drivetrain. Now, the downside for that is if the battery gets really cold, then usable capacity goes down. And we did have a snowflake on the battery pack towards the end, which means 0% may have come on sooner. So I don't know which would have been more efficient, trying to warm the battery, keeping it warm, or having a little bit of loss of capacity due to cold, but definitely impacted due to cold, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for the warm weather test now, actually, just see the difference.
It'll be great to have both. And I think it was good to use non-winter mode, because now we have a really good basis of what the car can do in this temperature without it trying to heat itself up. But I will say it must not have been that cold of a battery pack, because when we plugged it in, it went right up to 100 kilowatts.
Yeah, it's cool that it Zach
maxes the charger out. So it wasn't limiting the charging speed is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, he's got it. He's local, which is awesome, because this way, when we get the EV6 to test, we can directly compare EV6 to Ioniq 5, which, you know, should have a lot of similarities. But I'm really super curious for that, because I have never been in an EV6 either. This is my first time in the Ioniq 5 as well. So that was fun to finally experience it. And I think it like met, sort of exceeded my expectations. I didn't really know what to think, but I loved the look so much that I tend to have that color, what I think it's going to be like. And it would have been a huge letdown if it had been like, oh, drives terribly, but it looks good. Because I'd still be like, maybe I should buy it.
Get a chance to drive it, because North Carolina does not sell.
Oh, that's right.
Hyundai doesn't sell
it. That's not true. Hang on. That's not true. I have seen them being unloaded off of trucks in Cary.
Really?
Johnston. Yeah.
They have them for sale, and they are at sticker.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
Well, that sticker's fine.
Maybe we should go trade in the Mini.
Well, is it
I would have an Ioniq 5.
That would be a great idea. Sell the Mini. You got the tax credit last year.
I did, yes.
Go get another one.
It's tempting, trust me.
Just keep going.
That tax credit was really nice to get at the end of the year.
They have them available. Get a rear wheel drive.
I know a guy there.
Ioniq 5.
That would be sweet.
It's not a bad idea.
Now the gears are turning again. Thank you.
Yeah. That's good. That's a
just
car.
After I recall hearing, we're going to keep this car for a while.
Well, the tax credit was really nice. So another one wouldn't hurt.
Kyle's, and it's for a separate year too, so you're
really gonna
I mean, maximize that thing.
Kyle's dad has proved like that business does. Model.
Yeah,
yeah. You should go buy an Ioniq 5. They're not going to lose their value.
Yeah, I mean, that's so the thing.
They're like listed at sticker, but would they?
No,
actually...
don't sell them at sticker. We know some people.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know they. Yeah, some people.
I know a guy.
Yeah, that the whole dealer markup thing is, yeah, I don't know.
You should have seen, I was texting one of my friends who works there. I really won't say who or what, but she was saying, like, what are we supposed to do with these things? Like, how are we supposed to charge them? No one told us anything. So they arrived at dealers and they'd have no, because they didn't sell Konas.
Yes, they didn't train, I guess.
Yeah, right? They have like one, I think she said it was like a 3 kilowatt charger. I don't know if it's hooked up wrong.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, we got like 10 of these things. What are we supposed to do with them? And I'm like, well, charge the ones you need out to like 90% before you hand them over, and then keep all the other ones at just 50% and stuff them in a side lot.
What's the trim level? I'm on the website now. What's the trim level you need for the roof?
It's the top one. It's so.
You can't do an SE.
You can't do SE.
They have a lot of SEs.
Yeah, you need to
do. It shows they have 78.
Why? Well, those might be orders coming in.
Yeah, they are. They have 4 limiteds.
Yep, you want one of those.
Do I get blue, white, or shooting star?
That's the matte one.
The matte is
what you want, a shooting star with the green interior. It's not actually green. It's white.
This one has the green.
That's what you want. It's white seats with red piping and a olive dash.
By now.
57,140.
It's the identical car that I reviewed in my video.
So much more expensive.
Just buy it. Who the fuck cares about the money? Excuse my language.
You get to the $60,000 range, there's so many other different types of cars.
Yeah, but you have rear wheel drive.
Well, they don't have a rear wheel drive limited, so.
Well, find someone who does.
Keep going.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, they'll swap. They could do someone who has a rear wheel drive limited probably wants an all wheel drive limited.
Yeah, I'd rather have a rear-wheel drive. That's interesting. It's just money. That's what I always tell people at work. Oh, it's just money. Banks loan money.
Yeah. Honestly, you just finance all of it, and then when you're done, sell it, walk away, and it's like, nothing ever happened. Because you won't ever be upside down in it.
Money is a construct, Mike. Ignore that part of this deal.
Yeah.
It's a free car.
Okay? I mean, yeah, that's how your dad looks at it.
Yeah. That's how I look at it. Okay.
Is there a difference in the headlights between an so I know we're on this thing for a while now. The SE and the SEL, it looks like the headlights become different.
It's possible. I do think so.
Yeah, I bet you there's a difference. I don't know off the top of my head, but
you definitely don't want anything less than an SEL.
Yeah, I wouldn't get anything less than an SEL.
But then you don't even get the roof, and then you got this ugly light headliner.
I wish that they need an SEL like plus.
Yes, SEL like, plus SEL roof. With the roof.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But this Hyundai, is what I'm telling them. I don't know what their product planners are doing over there, unless they just can't make that many sunroofs.
The glass roof.
They probably make more money on the other one, and they just want to push people towards it.
From like 42 grand and up is all glass roof.
I know. See, that is the thing. And ID4 does come with a better roof. And I'm assuming the Kia EV6 is going to be a similar setup to the Ioniq.
EV6 is more expensive.
It is, yeah.
And less cool.
It is. It does. I don't know. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
But the Ioniq 5 is definitely
cool. I just think the Ioniq 5 is cooler.
Yeah, the EV6 looks good, but it's not game changing. It's just a good game.
I don't know. I do. Dang it. Why do we have to talk about it now?
That would be quite the name of a podcast. We start with introducing Mike to the ID or Ioniq 5, and then we end with him having purchased one.
I just bought it online. Like, it was easy.
The next podcast. So what are you driving?
You can make it there before they close and take delivery.
That'd be kind of funny.
So Jordan, what are you buying? You said you want a new car or something like that?
Yes.
I have given thoughts, which
Ioniq 5.
I really like the Ioniq 5, but it's a lot of money. But I love the Miata. Miata's not going anywhere, and I even love it in winter. Kyle and Timon can attest to that. It's just a fun car to mob around the snow. But it would be nice to have something that could do some light trails, so I don't have to worry about 3.5 inches of ground clearance or 3. I don't know what I'm at right now with the Miata.
Not a lot.
And then more. You know, more snow. Like, we're getting up to 14 inches of snow on Wednesday, apparently.
Jordan, I have the perfect car for you.
Oh, Jesus.
And the order banks just opened yesterday, which I haven't built one yet. It is the new plug-in hybrid Range Rover with the 30-kilowatt-hour pack.
Yes. I've not built one either.
Yeah. And it has the great inline six from the Discovery and Defender. Mm-hmm.
No more of that four-cylinder plug-in hybrid, which was fine, but the four-cylinder was a letdown in that.
The problem with the old plug-in Range Rover was it had a really garbage electric system, and it had a really garbage combustion system, so just buy the supercharged one.
We liked it at the time when we were driving it. Yeah, like, it works great.
Because plug-in hybrids are hard to get here in the U.S., but in Europe, that's just a compliance machine.
You know what's a great fun fact about the Range Rover plug-in full-size?
What?
Has a larger battery than Mike's Mini.
It does, yes. Right.
And it probably charges about the same because it can do 50 kilowatt CCS fast charging.
Yes, then it does charge the same.
That's depressing, actually.
So, Jordan, what do you think about the car we've selected?
So I was thinking, it would in some ways hit two birds with one stone because I also would love something electrified at some point. I don't know if the time is right because nothing on the market has really intrigued me yet.
Really?
Yeah. Still waiting.
What about just leasing an ID4 for like $299 a month or something?
I just could never own one.
My boss wants to do that.
I like driving them, but it's not me. It has nothing to do with me, I feel like. The ID4 is just not me.
MX-30.
Ioniq 5 is closer. MX-30 actually is totally me, except for the range.
Are you kidding me?
And the charging.
That's perfect range for you. You don't need more than 100 miles.
No, I think I need MX-30. 200. I would love
200 miles.
200
please.
Miles or 160.
You can go buy 4 DC fast charging stations between your house and the office, and you can stop at all of them in the MX-30.
You probably have to.
I think I was the other night. I think I was. playing Fortnite with Forrest, and for some reason this popped in my head. I was like, you know what? Because he had the MX-30 on loan to review, and he's like, yeah, it's terrible. And I was like, okay, it's 1/5 the cost of a Lucid Air Dream Edition, and it goes 1/5 the range. So it all works out.
That's good math. That's good math. Yeah,
great math. So go buy 5 MX-30s, and you know, one per day, because you'll need 2 days to charge one.
You need to build your own network of MX-30s.
You leave one on a level 2 every 100 miles and you just switch cars.
Yeah, you leave one at work, because if you
like
make
the old mail.
If you make system. It to work, it won't charge in time for you to leave work and make it back home. So I was thinking cheaper and quirkier. Let me share
my quirkier is good, because if you were going to say Jeep, I was just going to log off now.
So what stemmed this actually was my time with the 4xe. I was like, this is cool. But it's not for me. And then the Bronco was like, this is really cool. And then I was like, oh, 2-door Bronco manual, I'm sold. But that's too expensive. But I've always loved
like
quirky.
$30,000.
Too expensive. I've always loved
I want mini trucks.
I want an actual winter beater, something I can kind of actually beat on and not worry about it too much. Kind of like Timon with his Lexus paint. We didn't really talk about this, but I should have got the video from you. I may have driven Timon's Lexus into a ditch, avoiding a Silverado. Nice. Heading straight for me on snow. I was like,
What happened. We're driving down a dirt road, normally 2-lane dirt road, nothing fancy. Truck comes, Jordan in the ditch,
evasive maneuvers
deep in the ditch. I'm like, hold on, here we go. So we're just like, you'll see this is a wide road, nothing crazy here, and he's got this thing stuffed so far I'm backing up.
But look at how that ditch just doesn't look like a ditch, because
it's deep with the snow. Yeah,
the snow does this, but in reality the ditch really was down there. So got it out though, because it's a Lexus, and I may have hit some tree branches and stuff, but I think the paint's fine. It's roughly about what it was when I leave cars how I found them. But I was thinking it'd be fun. So I went down the research rabbit hole of fun, imported, unique, not necessarily imported. Some of these we got. But okay, for the audio listeners, I have a Toyota Prado 2-door, a Mitsubishi Pajero 2-door, Suzuki Samurai, and Isuzu Vihicross.
Isn't that the Pajero like mini or sport or whatever? It's like, it's not the big one. Jordan, it's the itty bitty one.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of DuncanImports.com?
Yes.
Yes.
I have spent some time on there.
We've been there. Ben and I toured that.
Yeah.
Really?
And the Volvo Trucks factory in the same day.
It's right down the street from Volvo Trucks North American.
Yeah.
And so you can hit two in one day. And they're the most, how would you describe going to Duncan Imports? It is a holy experience in the way that they will sell you as many Bibles as they can. And then also show you some of the rare cars.
And it's great because they have like a warehouse just littered with cars. And then they have a gravel parking lot littered with more cars, like these weird Japanese hearses that have all this ornate woodwork on them that are gigantic.
But they're hardcore like Christians.
Yes.
It's so funny. I don't
you know. Will leave, you get a Bible with each car, pretty much.
You leave in the good graces of God. Yeah. After buying your Japanese imported vehicle.
Oh, do you guys inspect the cars? We don't inspect the cars. Jesus inspects the
cars. Yes, Jesus inspects the cars.
God has a plan, and it's not for you to get a pre-purchase inspection.
They'll literally be like, we don't know if you can make it home on these 30-year-old rotted out tires. But God does.
If I wanted to double the budget of those other cars.
Get a Delica, then you can camp in it.
Mitsubishi Pajero Evo.
Yes. That's my
kind of
car.
The true homologation special that I would love, but $30,000 for an old car with high miles. I don't think so.
Anything with box fender flares is good.
But it looks great, but it's approaching, new Bronco 2-door prices.
This is arguably cooler, though, I feel like.
Ben, they have a 2003 Smart Roadster for sale.
Kyle's Smart Roadster.
But you can't get those here, right? Because it's not 25 years.
It doesn't matter. It's Dunkin' Import. God says it's okay. You can also buy a 2001 for two Brabus, a Smart Brabus with the old style that we never got here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wow, this is amazing.
I think you get a Delica. It's small. You can drive like a lunatic, and you can camp around in it. Perfect. It's got a table. You can eat lunch in the thing.
Yeah, I Delica's not quite for me. I think the
Of those,
the Samurai is probably the best, because what I've really loved about the Jeep and the Bronco was take the doors and roof off. Yes, you can have a two-door Prado with no doors, a zero-door Prado, but and you would be really unique, but it wasn't meant to be that way. But I don't know.
Yeah. What's the Hilux Surf where the whole roof thing comes off? That'd be kind of neat.
That one is cool too. Yeah.
Japanese Imports LLC probably is something lying around that you can just go buy.
Think about it this way. If you buy something from Dunkin' Imports, since it's on the East Coast where we are, we'll drive it to you.
That would be a great
only if deliver God allows us to, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We'll have to pray on it.
Dunkin' Imports is down on inventory.
Look at these CRVs with the the CRX.
CRX. Yeah, there
you go. Love the Del Sol. Always love those.
You already have a Miata. You don't need another one.
No, I don't need
this. What about a mini truck, like a little Honda Acty?
So they have a what is it? The I don't know what it's called, but there's a
Suzuki.
I think it was a Nissan of some sort. Like they use like a fire truck. I thought would be the coolest thing to have over here.
Yeah, we almost got one of those for the out of spec track.
Okay, I have almost bought one of their fire trucks or multiple of their fire trucks for like the last 8 years.
Someone's got
it. We have had this discussion like 2 years ago about this.
You know, you could buy a mini K truck fire truck, and instead of mobile detailing business, you have everything you need in the built in pressure washer. Don't need it. Fire truck.
Yep. Yeah. These things are sweet.
But they go about 30 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's all fun thoughts. But, you know, the snow and stuff has made me think about it. And Jordan, that Bronco is so fun.
Just go and lease a Model 3.
I was going to say Model 3 standard range. You know, it's not the most exciting answer in the world, but it is a decent car.
It's a very
nice. You really drive so much, you should be doing it electric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a thought. Because I've also gone down the e-Golf and Fiat 500e and all those e-cars. But the range, even on the e-Golf. Now, I think the i3 with the range extender, the one that does like 120 miles of battery and the range extender, that would be perfect. But
the check engine light's going to turn on every time the range extender turns on.
Yeah, but why if you're going to already rely on the range extender, why not just get the small battery i3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, the idea would be not really rely on the range extender. Just I don't think mini. I would hardly ever need it.
But, well, it dies if you don't use it.
Well, I'll use it every once in a while.
It's like the Volt. Get a Volt if you want a range extender.
Yeah,
Volt. God, that's how you know your life is miserable.
Big Volt guy over here.
Oh, I do like
honestly, the Tesla standard range is probably the best thing to get.
It's a good car, and I genuinely am fine with the Model 3. A lot of people hate on it. I am genuinely fine with it.
Well, how could you not be? It's amazing.
It does everything very well.
Yeah.
So what? I've owned two of them. I have zero regrets on either of them.
Did any of you guys listen to the earnings call last week?
I read it. I didn't listen to it.
It was interesting. Someone asked how's the progress on the $25,000 car, and Elon was effectively like, we've stopped working on it.
No, he said we've never worked on it.
Yeah. I don't recall like,
what
that.
What are you talking about? Oh, that thing? Why are you even thinking about that? Why would we ever make that?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Cybertruck's delayed until 2020. Well, it's delayed indefinitely.
Look, you can think about all of the things Tesla isn't doing, but you can also think about all the things they are doing. They're building up Tesla Giga Austin, Tesla Berlin, mega chargers are going in.
Yeah.
Semis
are happening.
Yeah. It's crazy. And they're building the world's fastest SUV and the world's fastest production sedan. It's just insane. And
a robot.
And then, like I said, let's focus on what they're doing. Really
no, that was Elon said they're focusing heavily in 2022 on the production of the robot.
Yeah, it's
so
done.
I'm
Well, yeah, but yeah. Like Kyle said, I mean, they still make really good cars in the Model 3. Yeah.
The cars don't need updating. They're smoking everyone in sales, which is the ultimate thing, and in brand passion and in production capacity. Because maybe the Lucid goes 500 miles and is better at some things. They just can't build them.
And we have no idea what service is like or long-term ownership.
You can't even buy one that goes 500 miles. This is the dumbest thing. Lucid's like, we made this awesome car. And they say it has zero battery buffer and we let you use everything, which is kind of sketchy in my opinion, but whatever.
Yes.
And it is incredibly impressive what it can do. They're only building not even 520 of them because that's how many Dream Editions there are. But some of those Dream Editions are the performance and some are range. And probably no one bought the range ones because no one cares about
it. No, they want 1,100 horsepower.
Right. So they built three of these things. I don't know what the number is, but I'm just...
I thought the Range one still was stupid fast anyways.
It's like 900 but like, horsepower.
Ben, are you going to say...
Oh, I don't know if I could make do with just 900.
But I agree with Kyle, though. I bet you 99% of the people got the performance one. Probably. That's all I ever see.
Put the small wheels on it and get nears makes no difference in the range. Or just be like, you know what? I will go one charging stop less, maybe, and look good on the 21s.
I think the move is going to be their like more basic one with the good wheels.
Yeah, just get a base air.
It's kind of like Taycan to me. I feel like these cars, once you get through your EV 0-60, like, you know, fetishizing, you got to have it, got to have it faster each time. Then you kind of just, you want enough and you want it to be comfy and feel good and handle well.
This is something only someone who bought the base model would say.
Yes, 100%.
As he was talking, the lights turned off around Kyle.
Too. Yeah, because so my filter lost interest.
Yeah. Speaking of base models, there's a new one.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, the T50 is too expensive for you. There is a T33 from Gordon Murray. Only 100 will be built, and there's still $1.8 million US roughly. So I don't really understand why this is being built, because the T50 is so awesome. If you have that kind of money, why do you need something slightly cheaper and slightly more
because
everyday
you can't
usable?
Buy a T50. They're all sold.
But just make more T50s.
Make more. That's what I'm wondering. Why are they making T33s? I don't understand.
I'm sure there's some reason.
The T50?
No. So why not like deliver to customer, but I actually think this one looks really good and I like it a lot.
It looks good. Who cares about looks when you're talking like this? It's all about what can the thing do.
That's true. So
can it do all the same stuff? It's going to give me all the same experiences.
No, it has 1,000 RPM red line less.
Oh no.
Oh yeah, it's only has 11,200 RPM red line.
I know.
I actually think it looks better.
It has cool everything else to me. But is it three seats? That actually, hang on, that's
important. No, it's two seats. It's two seats. And 10 cubic feet of storage, so double the Miata. In but the it has more storage than you can fit behind the third Rover Land Rover Discovery. By
that's
one
true,
cubic
because
foot.
That could be anything.
A pencil case. Yeah, the Land Rover Discovery behind the third row has 9 cubic feet, which is more than what I have on Miata.
Is that actually the case?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know it had one.
Oh, you're quoting real numbers. Okay.
Real numbers here. With 9 cubic feet, I did a month-long road trip in the Miata.
So you get at least another month in this bad boy.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just want to throw this thing out there because, you know, Ben loved the T50.
Well, I think this is such relevant readership information.
It is. Yeah. Well, because when the T50 came out, it was what, $2.4 million. I was like, you know, it's just a little out of budget. But this one, now that we're $1.8 million, I think we're starting to justify it a little more.
Yeah. You can fiddle some numbers. It looks great.
That's like a good $125,000 looking car.
Yes. Yeah, I think the Amira looks better and is one-tenth the cost at 120.
I'm just really bad at judging value from cars from visually, especially old cars.
You can't.
You could tell me that like some cars, I'm like, that's a million plus right there, super rare. And then it's like, actually was at Barrett Jackson for 25 grand. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to tell what's good. This to me, 125.
Yeah. I think this
looks that scale.
Well, I don't know if it looks a million, but I'd say it looks at least 250. Looks like it's supposed to compete with a Ferrari or Gallardo or something.
A Maserati MC20 looks better than this.
Yeah, this looks comparable to the MC20, I think, to me. But
let's put them up on the screen.
even
we can do it real time.
Yeah, find an MC20 for us.
I think I don't know.
It's going to be close.
The MC20 does look good. But I think I like the T33 has more curves. It's a little less over.
This is my understatement.
But you can actually go out and buy the Maserati where you can never buy the Gordon.
Oh, yeah. They were doing just press drives recently, I think. So yeah. We'll be hearing about it.
It's so good.
Their design language translated very well to the front of that car.
Guess who did not get an invite to the Maserati MC20 launch?
Oh, no.
This guy right here.
I'm sure they're really worried that they skipped over someone very important with that one.
Well, last but not least, I want to talk about the BAC Mono with hydrogen. Which what? this has nothing to do with anything real, but I love the BAC Mono. I would, that's like, if I could
you
just
have a picture of a normal BAC Mono,
they probably
not a shadow.
They're cool.
Yeah. Here's an example of a BAC Mono, for our visual listener watchers.
And a Plaid is faster.
It looks like a pod racer had an accident with, what are those?
It looks like a pod racer just lost its engines. Yeah.
Yeah. And an F1 car and a Stingray had a car.
I love it. Like if I could go pick one car to drive to Chipotle, it would be this.
Miata.
Well, Jordan, that's probably a bad idea because our local Chipotle parking lot sucks.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a curb in the way. You're going to be in trouble.
But they apparently are teasing a hydrogen, which I've only clicked on this because I was like, oh, we might get hydrogen in Fort Collins.
we have a filling station. We just haven't plugged it in yet.
Yeah, we have a hydrogen filling station. So I think we request one of these on loan to do some real, you know, end user testing for the people who are going to buy this, the everyday person.
No one.
I don't even know how much a real BAC Mono is.
Not only is it annoying having to drive one of these on the street to go to your track day.
Yes, I can only imagine.
Now it's going to be really annoying to drive one of these on the street to go to your track day, but you also can't fill it up anywhere.
When you get there,
Wait, did you see the funding and development name there? Go up a bit. Funding the development of the engine will be the Niche Vehicle Network Feasibility Study Grant.
Niche. Tell
Never
me this won't
a group been more aptly named.
Tell me this won't be mass production without telling me this won't be mass production. But yeah, it's all part of their initiative to go fully carbon neutral by 2030. It's not even electric; it's just carbon neutral.
I'm okay with fast carbon neutral cars.
Yeah,
you're going to have to spend $1 billion on your own racetrack to supply it with hydrogen.
Yeah, this is so stupid. It's such a waste of everyone's resources.
As are most things, Kyle.
I feel like I could get a vehicle funded by that grant. It's like the bar seemed low.
And
on that
you need
one.
To come up with a lawnmower that's also an off-roader overlander.
Oh, yeah. That'd actually, cool. This is a good thing you can put in. I saw it on TikTok, but you can probably Google this anywhere. Overlanding, but M-O at the front, like mower, moverlanding. And people get on these John Deere riding mowers and go off-roading them, and they're pretty capable, as it turns out.
That's awesome.
That's great.
So unfortunately, that product – actually, that means there's a demographic who might buy our product.
Well, for those listening or viewing, sorry, those last two cars were a great piece of consumer advice for the 1%.
Yeah, Jordan, do we have anything useful to share?
We already did. That was the entire first 90% of the podcast. I ended with useless information.
Limited rear-wheel drive is like $5,000 cheaper than the all-wheel drive, so –
and
now,
like,
it's in the price range.
1.75 million cheaper than the T33.
How many Ioniq 5s can you buy for one
T33? Yeah,
that
exactly.
So good number.
But yeah, we've reached the end of our hour show.
Oh, you know what we have coming by the time this podcast goes up, but it hasn't arrived yet because
plug-in hybrid Escape.
Escape.
That's cool. I'm interested in that car.
It's red, which is terrible, but everything else should be good.
Yeah. I don't like silver cars usually, but my Escape in silver with the silver 19s looked really
hell
good.
Hell yeah. Hot.
Is it a front-wheel drive only platform, or is it going to have all-wheel drive? Oh,
I don't know. This one's front-wheel drive. And then after that, we get the Defender. And then after that, we get the Maverick Hybrid.
Yes. That's cool. That's very
cool.
It's an XLT luxury pack or something like that.
I'm excited for that MPG loop.
It's going to be a million.
That's a good truck. Ford hit it out of the park with that thing.
I have yet to drive one.
Yeah, but it's great interior. Fantastic.
Yeah, we got we did the first drive stuff, but Brandon went and did all that, and I was so jealous because I don't know, and I don't think this one has it, but I love the orange accents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the interior.
Well, you'll see all that coming up on our Twitter, of course, @_of_spec, and our YouTube channels at Out of Spec. Reviews is a lot of that stuff. And check out our Onyx 5 stuff on Out of Spec Reviews. And you'll find me at @Jordan_Schieffer, Kyle @ItsKyleConnor, Ben @Benji_OOS, and Mike @M_Reeling. So thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you very soon on the next one.